Hello, you, and welcome to You Are Good, a feelings podcast about movies. Today, we are talking about Crossroads. We're talking about it with the great Eve Lindley and Miranda Zickler. I, typically one of your hosts, Alex Steed, am sitting this one out. I'm a real Anson Mount in this situation, which you'll understand if you're a Crossroads fan or once you listen through to this episode. And of course, our fabulous guests will be joined by the marvelous Sarah Marshall. And hey, I just want to let you know up top, a special treat. If you are a supporter on Patreon or Apple Podcast subscriptions, there is a director's cut of this conversation. You won't be surprised to hear that Sarah, Eve, and Miranda got together and talked about this movie, and it was like a 3-hour plus conversation. So there's a longer version of this conversation as a bonus episode over on Patreon and Apple Podcast subscriptions. I just want to let you know that as soon as possible. If you want to listen to the director's cut, it's over in those places. You Are Good is a feelings podcast about movies. This means we are not film critics. We're not looking at the movie necessarily for holes or reasons to tear it down. We watch movies and we say, here's what resonated and here's how it made me think about being a human who relates to this world and to and with other people. That's what we do. And we have a fun time with it. Sometimes we might have a critical thing or two to say, but really, this is what You Are Good is all about. I'm just letting you know, in case you are new to this show and you don't know how the whole thing works. And if you are new, welcome aboard. Crossroads is, and I don't even need to tell you this, a 2002 American teen road comedy drama film directed by Tamara Davis from a screenplay by Shonda Rhimes. The film stars Britney Spears, Anson Mount, Zoe Saldana, Taryn Manning, Kim Cattrall, and Dan Aykroyd. In this episode, you'll hear a little bit in the conversation, but this episode is taking place because over at You're Wrong About, Sarah and Eve are engaged in a multi-part bonus exploration of Britney Spears' book over in their bonus episode land. So this is a companion piece to that conversation. If you don't know, Eve Lindley, one of my dearest and very best friends, is an American actress and model. She's the best. Miranda Zickler, also fabulous, is in the band Cuenca, is a musician, is a wonderful person, one of my favorite people to talk with ever. And she is the producer of You Are Good. So you're in for a bunch of pals talking about a lovely movie. How are you doing? How are you feeling? What is going on in your world? Let us know over on the social media. You can find us at You Are Good or You Are Good Pod, depending on the place where we're at. We also have videos that we put up on Reels that sort of summarize some of our episodes or have clips from some of our episodes. So keep an eye out for that. I also post those over on my own TikTok at Alex Steed. You can find us in all those places. Let us know what's going on in your head. Let us know how you're feeling in your heart. And don't forget that you, my friend, are good. I, in case you're wondering, am recording this first thing in the morning before I go to jury duty and vote. So that might explain my energy right now. I'm jacked on bottled cold brew, and I'm ready to go participate civically on several levels. Last night, I don't even know how I arrived at this place. I was watching Toto, the band, live at Montreux, 1991. These clips are on YouTube, and I don't even know much about Toto, but these clips rip. That's what I was up to last night at around midnight to 1 a.m. And now I am going to jury duty. Now I'm going to go potentially decide a person's fate. Wish me luck. Anyway, that's enough from me. You Are Good, a feelings podcast about movies, is made possible with and by your support. Thanks to everyone who supports us on Patreon and Apple Podcast subscriptions. In exchange for your support, you get bonus episodes. There'll be a bonus episode this very month you can look forward to, in addition to this director's cut of this episode over there. If you are a supporter of us on Patreon and Apple Podcast subscriptions. Thank you so much. Again, you got these bonus episodes and you make the show possible. It would not be possible without your support. We cannot make this show without folks giving us a few dollars a month and that money adding up and us being able to get paid and have part of our jobs be to make this show. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Also, if you like the show, let people know that you listen to the show and that they may also love heartfelt conversations about Crossroads. Thanks for all of you who do this. I see you share us on social and I really appreciate that. But if you're not letting people know that they should be in on You Are Good at Feelings podcast about movies, please consider doing so. Thank you so much. Hey, I just wanted to offer a super quick content warning. Sexual assault and rape does come up in this conversation in the context of the plot of the movie. There's no real detail. It's not lingered on in any real way, but it will come up in the conversation. And so if that's not for you today, there are all sorts of other episodes in our catalog for you to check out. Just wanted to give you a heads up about that. If you, like me, are an advocate of ceasefire and are looking for events to get involved in or ways to be involved, there are very likely organizations local to you. There are definitely national organizations that are organizing those sorts of efforts. But if you're looking for a place to give some of your resources, to share some of your resources, get in touch with the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. I will put a link to that in the show notes. And that's it from me, at least. Anson out. You're about to go on a delightful car ride top down with my great friends, Sarah Marshall, Eve Lindley, and Miranda Zickler. And I am excited for y'all. This is a romp. Have a wonderful trip.
Let's literally go, girls. Hello, Sarah Marshall.
Hello, Miranda Zickler.
Oh my God, who's in your convertible today?
It's none other than Eve Lindley. We tossed out Anson Mount a few miles back, so it's just the girls.
Yay.
Hi, Eve.
Hi, Miranda.
The car is running great.
This is called a well-oiled machine. No one's radiator is cracked.
Exactly. This is especially fun for me because I have been deep in Brittany conversations between the two of you. There's about 4 hours so far. And I think you're 80 pages into The Woman in Me, Britney Spears' memoir. So
it's at a lightning fast 1 hour per 20 pages, which honestly is about my reading speed.
I gotta tell you, and I think there's just, it's a very rich text.
It is.
There's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, this is the thing.
Absolutely. And it's so beautiful. And those or one or some or many of those episodes will be out by the time this comes out.
At least one of them. And Miranda, you have been tasked with part of the job of condensing these down.
Yeah.
Like Marco Pierre White.
And nobody envies you.
I spent the whole day listening to you two talk about the impact and the life of Britney Spears yesterday. And so I am just fully ready for this ride.
Aw.
That's also great because you're going to remember all the insightful stuff that we said that, Eve, if you're anything like me, you forget the second you say it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, Miranda, you texted me something I had said in a recording you were editing yesterday. And I was like, that was really good. And then I was like, wait, I said that. I was like, wait, this changes everything. But Miranda, we're talking today about Crossroads, and we really wanted to make this a special occasion, a kind of sleepover experience, because you know what I was thinking about the other day is how when I bought the unabridged diaries of Sylvia Plath when I was 14, a decision my mother endorsed because she doubtless bought it for me at a Borders. The blurb on the front from, I think, Joyce Carol Oates was a genuine literary event. And at the time I was like, yeah, I guess there's just this thing called literary events. And then this week I was like, wait, what does that mean? What's a literary event? And I was like, I feel like you just know it when you see it, like erotica. And talking about Crossroads returning to availability for most people, I feel like this is a genuine cinematic event.
Yeah.
You're so right.
So I moved to LA in May of 2022. Mm. And in June of 2022, my friend Nick and I drove around Los Angeles going to used DVD stores looking for the Crossroads DVD. We did it for an entire day. And we did find the DVD. And for like literally years, I had been looking for Crossroads on iTunes and Amazon, and it was never available. And I had the DVD as a kid, but, you know, like through adulthood, I got rid of all my DVDs. Mm-hmm. And it's been so hard to find. I blame Jamie Spears, of course, because I think you could blame him for almost anything.
Absolutely.
It's just crazy to me that a film disappears, like a film that is pretty... Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not going to say it's like an important film in the grand scheme of like films.
I think it is important.
Thank you.
I'm willing to say that as a less interested party.
Tell us why, Sarah.
Well, okay. So in a weird coincidence, yesterday, Portland's Hollywood Theater, which is a great institution, had a screening of The Wizard of Oz as a benefit for a nonprofit called Elbow Room. But I was thinking, watching The Wizard of Oz, first of all, this is pretty self-evident, but you know how often when you see old movies in a theater, even something really well made, there are moments when just our brain, which has been, you know, malleted and breaded and deep fried by today's media and all of our cutting techniques, like there are many moments where you have to be like, no, keep paying attention, because just remember, this is very exciting if it was 1945. But you don't have to pretend that you're an olden dazer when you watch The Wizard of Oz so that you can pretend it's exciting, because it is exciting. It just is a great movie, which is beside my point. But the point, I think, is that, you know, this was a defining early role for Judy Garland. I mean, I know she had done Andy Hardy stuff before, and Eve, you know more about this, but this was a giant movie and a giant moment in her career, if not an important transitional moment for her. And I feel like Crossroads is that for Britney Spears. It's her being a leading lady, and I think she carries this movie. And I find it very upsetting that this movie has a 3.6 on IMDb.
Does it really?
Yes.
That is crazy.
I thought you were going to say Rotten Tomatoes, and you know my feelings about Rotten Tomatoes, and I'm sure it has a low score there too.
I'm sure. And in my opinion, this movie is, even if you're being objective about it, it's at least a 5.
Thank you.
And in my opinion, it's like a 7.2.
It is such a Wizard of Oz too, which I have fully not thought of.
The Wizard of Oz is fundamentally about someone moving to LA from somewhere else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With three pals.
Just like you did, and Judy Garland did, and Britney Spears did. The big three.
It's true. The big three.
That's right.
Yeah. And I think that like Crossroads is maybe not on par with like The Bodyguard, but it's certainly on par with like teen movies of the 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah.
The Bodyguard is too long though.
Yeah, this is a cool 90, isn't it? Something like that.
It's a cool 90.
Yeah, it's tight.
It's tight.
And like, I think with movies like this, there's a layer to them where it's like you're taking the movie at face value. And then there's a layer to them that is like watching the mythology of Britney Spears throughout the film. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. We might be getting ahead of ourselves here, or I might be getting ahead of us. But the scene where Britney is crying on her bed to Dan Aykroyd, and she's like, I worked so hard and it didn't feel like anything. Mm. I was like, that is, she's talking about her real life. Like, that is real for her.
And then Dad says, what are you talking about? It felt great.
Yes, I
know. So spooky, so prescient.
It really was.
God, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's dark. So before we get started on our great journey, I wanted to ask both of you, Eve, what was your first experience seeing this movie like?
Okay, well, at the time I was like just a Britney fan, you know, like I would follow her to the ends of the earth. I had many like VHS tapes that were like compilations of her. Like I had a VHS tape that was her SNL performance. I had all of her albums at the time. Mm-hmm. Her third album coincided with this film. Mm-hmm. And her third album was like the mature album. Mm-hmm. It's called Britney. It's like she curses for the first time on it. Huge. And it's hell. It's not even like a bad curse. She says, what the hell?
But I'm sure it got it. That record stomped to death by a few Baptist dads anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this was also when she became very sweaty and wet all the time.
She was really, everyone was wet for a while in pop, huh?
Yeah. And this was, you know, oops, I did it again. She was glossy, but she wasn't sweaty quite yet.
No.
And now we're seeing sort of sweat and grit and
Gritney.
Oh my God. Wow. This is Gritney.
Incredible. It's Gritney, bitch.
And yeah, I remember like going to the mall to see it in theaters. Mm.
Did you see it with your friends?
I saw it with my dad. Oh. Yeah. I used to hang out with my dad a lot in these days. I didn't have like a lot of friends. This was like before I like came out and like befriended a bunch of queer people. And like, so I was hanging out with my dad at the mall. We would drop my sister off at the mall with all of her friends. And then my dad and I would just do whatever I wanted, you know?
Aww.
Yeah.
What about you, Sarah? What was your first experience with Crossroads?
Well, I remember it like it was yesterday because it was 2 days ago. And oh my God. I loved it.
I can't believe you never saw this, Sarah.
Wow. Yeah, I know. I was a very anti-Britney child. It's embarrassing.
Sure.
Because I felt like she was being marketed to me so hard that it was another thing that adults were trying to get me to do, like algebra. And so I went hard against Britney. And at the age when I should have been into Britney Spears, I was extremely into Joni Mitchell, who was in a way the Britney Spears of her 1970, time. But also in many other ways, not. But I really loved it. And it was so fun to watch it kind of with my expectations of the past 20 years, because I realized that I had, without realizing it, spent 20 years waiting for this Kim Cattrall cameo. And then when it finally happens, it's like there and gone like a summer's day.
That is so true. I feel like you settle into the cameo.
And then you're like, they're going to go to a diner.
You're like, this is going to be a great scene. And then like right as the shock wears off that she's on camera with Britney, she's gone.
Yeah. It's like, and just like that, you're like, wow, what a great scene they set up. Oh, we're not doing it.
God, they might as well have been playing the Sex and the City theme underneath that.
Yeah.
The whole scene with Britney.
Yeah. Oh my God. The muted Sex and the City. Yeah, that's what it feels like. But yeah, I loved watching it. And I feel like my favorite thing about the difference between my expectations and the reality is that I feel like all the promo material, the way people remember it, it's about this great girl road trip. It's for the girls. And there's a guy there the whole time. But what's great is that he just kind of drives and is helpful and doesn't bother anyone really.
Right.
And then his gift to the public was allowing us to completely forget him.
Yeah.
Except in Urban Legend's final cut.
Yeah, who is he in that?
He's Toby the cinematographer. You think he's the villain for the whole movie.
Right.
And maybe he is. I'm not going to give any spoilers for Urban Legend's final cut.
But it might be the person who has the best CV and is in the fewest scenes. You never know.
And you both know he's in Sex and the City, right?
Yeah, where is he?
He's the Hamptons guy that gives Charlotte crabs.
Oh, my God.
So this was, in fact, his second scene with Kim Cattrall, even though he doesn't really have the scene with Kim Cattrall, but they like wave to each other. I'm not sure if they were even there on the same day, but.
Oh my God.
Right. Wow.
He's like, sorry about the crabs.
Yeah. Okay, wait, Miranda.
Yeah.
What was your experience first seeing this movie?
Okay. Thank you for asking, Eve. I wanted to briefly tell my earliest experience with Britney Spears, which was like, I vividly remember the first time I heard Hit Me Baby One More Time. And I was in second grade and I had just had an experience where I sang in a Christmas program and I was wearing like a nice Christmas dress. And the cute boy I liked at school said, "You looked really pretty last night." And then I heard "Hit Me Baby" one more time. And I was like, "Oh, I know what this is about." And I got so, so into her first album. And then I saw this movie with like my bad girl friends, and we buried a time capsule and, you know, it could be anywhere.
Oh my God. I have a secret passion, like a deep, deep need to bury a time capsule. I've never done it. I've always wanted to do it, probably because of this movie. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely, for the record, no way that that box stayed in that park for eight years.
No.
Oh my God, I wanted to do that so badly.
We should do it.
We should do it.
I was like, that's what true friendship is.
I was just going to ask you what you would have put in it at that age.
Maybe the Crossroads DVD.
So that you can watch it later. It's a good investment.
So I know I always have one somewhere, you know.
God. Okay. So should we, Sarah?
Mm-hmm. It's time to get on the road. Miranda.
Don't you dare.
I was wondering if, oh, come on. Okay.
No, I bet Eve could do it.
Eve.
Yes.
Would you like to load us into this classic American car?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. She's ready.
But somehow Kit brought $27 or $47 or something.
Yeah. This movie works according to the logistics of eighth grade girls, and I think that's a feature rather than a bug.
You're so right.
Yeah. This movie is girl math, for sure. So are you asking me to summarize?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it starts on a dark night in a full moon. Three young girls, Jamie Lynn Spears' first acting role, if you can believe. Mm. I will say that as a child watching this movie, I said to my parents that they were going to have another kid. They were divorced for years at this point. And I said, "You're going to have another kid because I'm going to need somebody to play the younger version of me in movies."
God.
That's foresight.
Yeah. So these three girls, Kit, Mimi, and Lucy, bury a box, a time capsule, and they wish that they're always going to be friends forever. We immediately find out that that wish didn't come true. Mm. And we cut to Britney Jean Spears dancing in her bedroom. She's a normal girl, except she's got the tan of a pop star.
And the golden ratio of tummy meat.
Yes.
For girls of that era.
She's so beautiful in this movie.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I was watching it at certain points and I was like, she does kind of look like a normal girl. And then it would like kind of pull out and I'd be like, well, not really. So she's dancing to the Madonna song, "Open Your Heart." Mm-hmm. And she seems to have class, graduation, and prom all in one day.
They just cram it in at this school.
She's Lucy, the nerdy one. We see that what has become of Mimi is she is sort of pregnant. Not sort of pregnant, just pregnant. And she's sort of the rebellious, I guess, the girl from the wrong side of the tracks. And then we have Kit, played by Zoe Saldana in her, I think it's her first film role.
I feel like this is after Center Stage.
Oh, you're right. It is. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's hard to like order the years around the turn of the millennium. But right. It's like American ballet protege Zoe Saldana.
Yes. She's the popular one. The first thing we see is that she makes fun of Lucy for being a virgin. Do you think that that was put in as a nod to Britney's own life, or was it at the time, were people just that into virginity that it was like plot points?
The whole way that this movie handles sex is very interesting to me, because they have this like needle threading that I was thinking about, where it was like, well, Jessica Simpson famously was the pop star whose identity was so entrenched in being a virgin until marriage. And then I remember reading a feature article about her losing her virginity to Nick Lachey and how great it was to have waited.
God.
And Britney was like not there, but also, you know, Eve, as we talked about, it was like she was allowed to be sexy when she performed, as long as businessmen could make the argument that she didn't know what she was doing because she was virginal. But then it's also like, to skip ahead, like she does have a virginity losing story in this movie. So we have to set up that she like has mathed it out that she's going to have sex with Justin Long.
Yes.
Who is in every movie made this year.
I love that Justin Long is in this film.
Yeah.
Me too.
And it's like, it's that good Jeepers Creepers Justin Long where he's like young and like, oh, he's so cute.
Yep.
And pale and like the dark, dark hair.
Premature ejaculation era Justin Long.
Yeah.
And there was a shock to me. I was not ready for Justin Long when he popped up. As in Barbarian, I was also not ready for that.
Yeah. This movie is very on par with Barbarian in a lot of ways, actually.
That's true. It's about what women are capable of.
I do want to point out, this film is written by Shonda Rhimes, which is everyone's favorite fun fact. Mm-hmm. I mean, it never ceases to amaze.
Absolutely. And do you two know about Tamara Davis, the director?
No, tell us.
I've seen an interview of her talking about this, but I don't know what else she's done.
I didn't know anything about her, so I did a quick Google. She seems most famous for a documentary she did about Jean-Michel Basquiat.
Wow.
Because she was friends with him in the 80s and did this whole interview with him.
Oh my God.
Put away all the footage and then did this whole documentary. And then she also did Billy Madison.
Oh.
What?
So that's her range.
Whoa.
God. Amazing.
Yeah. And she was married to Mike D of the Beastie Boys for many years. Whoa. Also. So she really contains multitudes.
So, but in a way, it actually... it's like she knows how to deal with like a singular artist. Like when I think of
like Basquiat or Adam Sandler
or Adam Sandler. I mean, not that they're exactly in the same realm, but like.
But they were like both, you know, the king of the mountain for a certain moment of a different world.
Yeah. And now Britney, when making this movie, Britney is like the most famous woman in the world when this movie is made.
Wow.
So it's graduation / prom night, which is a totally normal thing that happens all the time. Or at least that's what I thought watching this. So they graduate. Kit's mother is played by Beverly Johnson, the fashion model. Brittany's father is played by Dan Aykroyd, other fashion model. And we never meet Mimi's parents.
Cynthia Nixon
and David Eichenberg.
They cut her scene. Yeah. There wasn't time to get into it. But so we go to the prom party, which is at a hotel. And I love that Britney is wearing like a nice little satin pink, you know, very early 2000s, like kind of a real looking prom dress.
Yeah.
And then Kit is in like something very kind of couture. And then Mimi is in a Boy Scout uniform. She's wearing like jeans under a slip dress.
Oh, God. Wow.
And then like a Boy Scout uniform top. I can't even. And she has the spiky bun, which is fabulous. So it's prom and Mimi is going to both of the girls. And Mimi is like, let's go dig up this box. And everyone is like, what are you talking about? Like, this was years ago. And Kit literally is like, I have better things to do than dig up some box. And she's seething. She's so angry. And then we see Britney. It's revealed that her and Justin Long, whose name is Henry, have made a pact to lose virginity to each other because Henry does not want to go to college a virgin. And of course, the last night of school is the time to do it. You can't wait until August.
No.
Can't go on a few dates beforehand. Mm-mm. And there's this scene that like, in a lot of ways does sort of speak to the Britney virgin conversation, but I actually thought it was very... I really enjoyed it that she's about to do it. And she's like, this just isn't what I wanted it to be.
I love that.
Yeah, totally.
I thought it was really great.
Because you're taught in so many ways as a girl that like, if you've gone through all of the steps that come before sex, then like you are for some reason obligated to do it. And I love that she's modeling being like, I don't actually want to.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm going to go dig up a box.
Yeah. She's not angry and he's not angry. Like, it's just sort of like, I mean, he kind of tries to pressure her a little bit, but like in a safe way, like you don't feel like it's dangerous or like he's going to get mad at her.
Yeah. He just has a list.
He has a list of reasons, which is so cute.
Yeah.
One of Kit's friends says like, because Kit is engaged, we find out. Mm-hmm. And so both Kit and Britney show up to dig up the box. And this is the beginning of the sexual tension between Mimi and Kit. Did anybody pick up on that?
Oh my God. I didn't, but I love this. I love this in retrospect.
It was off the charts for me this time, this watch. Because Kit shows up first and Mimi is looking for the box and Kit's like, it's 10 paces to the other side. And then Kit pulls the flashlight out of Mimi's hand and Mimi pulls it back and she's like, give me back my flashlight. And I was like, actually, what's happening there? And then they're both surprised to see Lucy there with a shovel. No one brought a shovel, but Lucy did.
Mm-hmm, of course.
I love that Brittany is playing the organized one in this.
Another thing that was refreshing to me is that the nerd is not like in like glasses and suspenders, but is like kind of hot and not like sexy schoolgirl hot, but just sort of like wearing a sweater and a nice blouse. And like the popular girl is like model-esque and like a woman of color, you know, at the time. You know, I feel like that would have been like the blonde girl with the big, like Britney would have been cast as the popular girl, you know? Mm-hmm. And I thought that had some nice undertones and foresight to it.
I love that she got to play a normal girl in this. And that feels like the hardest acting challenge in a way.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm sorry. Before we go any further, Eve, I feel like we have to talk about the part of the memoir where Britney references her method acting in this role.
Yes. I did want to talk about that. We purposely left this out of the You're Wrong About to talk about it here, which is that Britney got so consumed by this role that she said for months and months, she like lived as this normal girl.
She lived as Lucy.
She like lost herself completely. She like has a literally like a line where she's like, and then one day I was at like CVS with my friend and I realized I came back to being Britney. And I thought that, I don't know what that was for her, but I like to think that it was, you know, like to be a normal girl, like she wasn't able to do that ever. And so like how lovely to like slip into feeling, you know, not recognizable for someone like her.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
But she got kind of scared of it because she said she never acted again because of that. And she was like, I'm sure some actors do method acting. I know that happens, but like usually they know they're doing it. And I didn't know I was doing it. And it was like that whole passage.
It's so fascinating. I think also like unbeknownst to her, her body was like, yes, settle into this. This is the way life is. Like most people are not recognizable, you know, like allow yourself to settle into that.
Yeah, I love that take. Yeah. And then, well, and then the other little fun fact about that is that she, the only role she regrets not taking was in the film version of Chicago.
Yeah.
As?
I would assume Roxy Hart, which would have been absolutely incredible.
God, that would have been amazing.
Yeah. And she was like, it was all dancing and bossy. And that's the stuff I love. And I should have done it.
Yeah.
But yeah, she said other than that, she couldn't act again because it was too consuming, which is, it's just wild.
And she almost did The Notebook. I don't think they offered it to her, but her audition is online now. And it's very touching and sweet. And
yeah,
I stand by that she's kind of great in this movie.
I agree.
There's certainly moments where you're like, yeah, raw talent. You know, she's not Rachel McAdams, but there is something about her that is very fun to watch and very, I mean, tugs at your heartstrings, you know?
Yeah, she's so captivating.
Yeah.
Okay, so how do we get from the box to the road?
I ask myself that every day.
Well, they dig up the box and we find out that their wishes were Britney has put what is possibly a real gold locket in the box that, you know, sat underground for 8 years.
Good thing there weren't any metal detectors in this town.
Oh, my God.
By which I mean the old men who have them.
Or my partner, Chelsea Weber Smith. He loves their metal detector. I got them for their birthday.
I stand by my original description.
Yeah. Old man vibes.
Old man Chelsea. That's right.
So in the locket is a photo of her and her mother, which is Kim Cattrall, Jamie Lynn Spears and Kim Cattrall in a brown wig. And she wishes to find her mother. And it's revealed Britney's mom like left the family, you know, many years prior. And Kit put in a bridal Barbie. and she wished to get married, which it didn't really affect me until this watch, you know, because it's also talked about how Kit is like a chubby kid. And we find out later that, you know, her mother sent her to a fat camp. And I found it really touching that this like kid who's being told she's not enough wished to get married. And now she's engaged. Of course she's engaged her senior year of high school, because the second someone asked her, she said yes, you know. And then Mimi wishes for the world and puts in like a little keychain of the world. Mimi didn't seem to understand the assignment the way, in the way, because Lucy and Kit can really get their wishes and Mimi's is a little bit more, you know. Oh, and you know what? She does want to be a singer. So she says to the girls, I'm going to LA on a road trip to go do a singing competition for music. And sound like an alien. A singing competition for music.
A comedy concert.
Yeah, a comedy concert. And the girls are like, you're pregnant. What are you going to do? How are you going to get there? And she's like, I found a ride with some guy. And they're like, Mimi, you can't go all the way to Los Angeles with some guy. And then Mimi's like, fine, then don't come, whatever. And then they all go about their lives. And Brittany has this crazy scene. Lucy says to Dan Aykroyd, can we talk about mother?
mother and pa.
Mother and, yeah. She's using these crazy, talk about an alien. She like doesn't even know how to refer to parents in this movie. She's like, mother, papa.
Pop, can we talk about mother? Yeah.
So Dan Aykroyd sort of refuses to talk about it.
About mother.
Like, she left us. Don't think about it. Don't think about mother. Talk nothing of your mother.
Conceal, don't feel.
Yes, very that. And then Kit is like working and finds out that her fiance is not going to come back for the summer to visit. Lucy knows that her mother is in Arizona, which is on the way to Los Angeles. And Kit's fiance is in Los Angeles. So both the girls decide to go on the road trip. And Lucy sneaks away in the night and like leaves a note for her father. The girls meet up somewhere to go on this trip. And then we see that the man who is driving them, or the boy, or we never find out how old Anson
Mount is. The boy child.
He's not a boy, not yet a man.
Yeah.
He's somewhere between 18 and 35. It does not matter. Right? He has a car.
Later in the movie, when he says there's a law against taking minors who aren't family over state lines. And I was like, so are all of these girls 18, or are you doing it again?
God, good point.
I really should have asked before they left the state.
Yeah. I was like, that could have been a great plot point, actually. And then when they're getting in the car, the stage whisper, Brittany's like, who's the guy?
The guy.
Taryn is like, that's just Ben. He's really cool. And he's like in the driver's seat, and Taryn is in the passenger seat, and Brittany is behind the driver's seat, and they're whispering about him.
I want you guys to just perform this whole movie like a play, honestly. I realize we haven't had time to rehearse, but yeah, later on.
That's next in our Brittany series.
I would love to do a staged reading.
Good.
Yeah. Well, we should tell the viewers/listeners that Sarah is the Mimi, I'm the Kit, and Miranda is the Lucy.
It's true.
And I don't take that lightly, but it was also like I couldn't possibly be Kit. I mean, Eve is Kit.
And thank you.
You're the blonde with a plan.
Yeah.
And the calculator.
And the calculator.
You didn't bring money on the trip, but you brought a calculator.
And it takes her exactly 5 seconds of tip-tapping on the calculator at the Waffle House to know they do not have enough for gas or food.
Right.
Which is like, why did you need a calculator for that? You have $43.
I know.
But you did it, Britt.
Yeah. It's the way that they handle money, it makes absolutely no sense in this movie.
It's eighth grade girl logic. But did they have like $250-ish, like counting what everybody brought?
I think you're right. Yes.
But here's what I was bothered by is that, to skip ahead on the money plot, they're like, oh shit, we don't have enough money. Oh no, the car broke and Brittany diagnosed what's wrong with it, which is, I like that we can all agree that Britney Spears diagnosing the car problem is hot. That's for everyone.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And it does track logically because we see that Dan Aykroyd owns the mechanic shop.
Yeah.
So like it felt different than when like Megan Fox in like the Transformers movie like knows all about cars.
Totally.
Even though it is the trope of like the hot girl knowing about cars, but it for some reason I was like, I'm okay with this.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have a reason for it because it's like you have to put time into it. You don't just know it as a consequence of being hot.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is what I've heard. She's like, it'll be $300 or something, right?
Plus labor.
And then it is. And then they're like, okay, we're going to go to a karaoke contest in New Orleans. And I know that this is Britney Spears. So yes, there's a lot of talent in the room. But they appear to make like $500.
Enough money to get like a huge hotel suite.
Yeah.
To feel like they can do that and then still pay for the car repair.
And then get all the way to LA and then stay at a hotel in like Malibu or something.
And at one point, when they find out how much money they've made, Britney hugs Anson Mount and says, we're rich.
Yeah. And like, where's this club?
From this bucket being passed around for 2.5 minutes.
From tips during a karaoke song.
Yeah.
And Miranda, you're a professional musician. Does that happen?
Yeah. Miranda, are you rich? Do you do karaoke?
I do. I am rich only from karaoke. Yes. Correct. Yeah. I do really want to talk about this scene, though.
Please, yeah. Miranda, will you carve up this scene for us?
I will. Yes. So Taryn Manning is the singer, but she gets too scared. She can't do it. This night is hosted by Cool Mo D. The second troubadour from Gilmore Girls is there. He's heckling.
Is he the one who says, get off the stage?
Yeah. The long hair second troubadour. Yeah.
Yes. I've never seen Gilmore Girls, but he's also in Freaks and Geeks.
Yes, he is. He's the guidance counselor. Yes.
That is a line that I say once a month, get off the stage. And nobody ever knows what I'm quoting.
Oh, perfect. Now they will. The world will know to quote Newsies. So Britney ends up taking over the mic. And what I love about this, and I wanted to talk about this because Eve, something you bring up in the Britney episodes of You're Wrong About is the evolution of Britney's voice and how she goes from this kind of like contralto, like, you know, she still has like a lot of like pop sensibility in it, but like
I feel like she used to do like the Hannah Montana transition vocals.
Yeah, well, like Eve, you were talking about how it was like a lot of like R&B influence and things like that, and this performance is like a great example of that, I think.
Yeah,
because I hadn't like fully processed that, and her voice is so like she's got a little bit of the baby voice almost happening, but it's still very like deep.
It's sultry.
And sultry and like centered. It's not auto-tuned, which is so, and if it is, it's so tasteful. Like it's pre-pitch perfect and Glee. And yeah, like there's some real richness there.
There's grit.
There's grit. She's
it's Britney. Yeah.
But I was thinking about how when she transitioned into this pop stardom and took on this, the baby voice, the sexy baby voice, which is up and then the fry on top of it. And I can't think of another person who used that voice before her.
Huh. Yeah.
Can you? I've thought so hard about it.
Yeah. Not in the same way, you know.
Well, what's the history of the baby voice? Because I guess in like the modern era, we have to start with Betty Boop.
As Lake Bell said in her book, Inside Voice. Mm. Did you just come up with that, Sarah?
Betty Boop.
Yeah. That's something that like vocal specialists talk about as like the first nasal usage.
Oh, wow.
Do they really?
Yeah. Sarah. Huh. God. Incredible.
I'm just a ghost in the computer.
You sure are.
That's why her hair is so big. It's full of brain.
Full of brain. And there is honestly like some Stevie Nicks DNA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like she took the Stevie Nicks voice and like pitched it all the way up so it's Sexy Baby instead of Tortured Witch.
I want to hear Britney doing the Edge of 17. Has she ever covered that?
No, she should though. Just like the white winged dove.
Keep going.
The tortured witch to sexy baby pipeline is alive and well.
Yes. Oh, so well said.
Well, that's what the sexy babies grow up into, you know, after they receive the kind of treatment sexy babies can expect in our society.
And honey, that is absolutely the truth, let me tell you.
I also love that this movie is like generous with other people's music, you know, and that there's a lot of homage, which I feel like you can kind of feel that this movie is made by women in that way. Yeah,
totally. And you know what? In the way of a Caroline O'Donohue phrase, this movie is very a musical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to very a play.
Yeah.
And not in that burlesque way where they're like, all right, we're going to sing a song. Are you ready? It's coming. Are you freaking out?
No, it's just like they really are performing all of these songs in the car.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we have these musical numbers too. So it's like this sweet, like sneaky musical.
It doesn't feel forced.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Like Bye 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 does not feel.
It's so great.
Because that really was an playing in everyone's car at that time.
Yeah. And we know that Britney was obviously dating him at the time, but like watching it this time, like I almost like forgot about that texture of it.
Totally.
And just thought, yeah, teenage girls.
The fact that it actually feels like that, I feel like is proof of how well this movie works. I think that you're, yeah, like, oh, it's just teenage girls singing a popular pop song of the time. Wait, they're dating.
There's layers. Yeah. They're dating. Yeah. And it's like Zoe Saldana who takes like that big note, even though she's,
yeah,
the only one that's actively not a singer. It's just like, so it's so well done. It's so sweet.
And so they make all this money. They immediately blow it on a too fancy hotel where they eat from the mini bar and order a ton of room service. And Anson, Ben, leaves. We don't know where he goes. We never find out where he goes.
Very odd. But it's so that the girls can have their time, I suppose.
Yeah. And they do have their time. And it's I love that scene.
Yeah.
Sitting out in a courtyard in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Oh, it's dreamy.
And it looks like a real courtyard. I feel like my problem with movies like this, especially of this era, is that everything often feels synthetic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, people are in like places that don't feel like places that you as a real human would go to or experience. Like everything feels a little bit off because it feels like there's so much money riding on the project that at a certain point, you know, everything got so digested that you lose the feeling of any individual human voice in it. And this just actually feels like a real screenplay with real locations that you might find yourself in.
Yeah, exactly. So this sleepover, like a lot is revealed. Britney talks about she knows that her mother wants to see her. She's just scared to come back. Kit talks about going to fat camp. She has this really heartbreaking line where she's like, being fatter than my mama was unacceptable, but being more beautiful than my mama was even more unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is where Mimi, because there's sort of been this mystery around Mimi's pregnancy, because Mimi kind of, mm-hmm, had a boyfriend that we met who asks her if the baby is his. And then Mimi reveals that she was assaulted and the baby is a result of that assault.
Mm. And they're like, who did it? And she's like, just some guy
drinking out of a blue bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, once again, there's something about Kit and Mimi that I am like,
yeah, there really is. Now that you've said that, I see it more and more.
Yeah, there's a lot of subtext. And I know that a lot of it is because like Britney is the star and she has a romance with Anson. And so the other two girls are always, mm-hmm, hugging in the back and like, you know, singing backup and
play fighting,
just like filling the scene. But it's really palpable. And then Anson comes back. He falls asleep in the car when they're getting food at a gas station and the girls steal the car.
With him in it. So, you know.
With him in it. Yeah.
Victimless crime.
Mimi is going to drive. But once again, Mimi's always like, I'll do it. And then she can't do it. Like the singing.
Yeah.
And then Lucy is like, fine, I guess I'll do it then.
Uh-huh.
She just needs someone to get her started. And then she'll like, I'll do this crazy scheme.
Yeah.
I just need it to be someone else's idea.
She needs two people to say we voted and you lost.
I love that. I love that that comes back. I think that's so cute.
Yeah.
And then they drive around listening to Shania Twain.
Mm-hmm.
And then Anson wakes up, freaks out, has like a mentee bee.
And then this is the only part that I didn't feel aged fantastically for this character, where he's like, every other part of my life has been invaded by girls. All I have left is the car. It's like, calm down.
And then they ask him if he's a killer, if he killed a guy. And that's when he shares with them that his stepsister was being abused and he went to the house, picked her up and drove her over state lines, which is technically illegal. And the stepdad pressed charges because she was a minor.
You violated the Mann Act.
And then they camp. And during the camping, Lucy reads her poem.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Which is a little cringy, but because it's just the lyrics to I'm Not a Girl, Not Yet a Woman.
Which sound much worse spoken than they do sung.
Absolutely. Yeah. Really loses some of the gusto when you speak them. And Mimi shows Kit how to throw a punch. Another kind of lesbian, yeah. Lesbian moment. And then, yeah, they camp. They go to Arizona. They drop Brittany off at her mother's. Brittany has not called her mother. Mm-mm. She has not filled her in. She's just assuming she'll be home. Who knows where she got the address?
The guy at the karaoke contest was like, if you need a good private detective, this guy owes me a favor.
Your mother lives at 8209 Tucson Way. So Brittany knocks on the door. And from Kim Cattrall's point of view, a young child shows up. Although you must know immediately that you left a daughter behind. And the daughter kind of looks like you. You both have the same blonde blowout.
That's how you know.
She turns and waves at all her friends. They wave back. They leave. And then she goes, Mother, it's me, Lucy. Kim Cattrall goes so cold in a great way, you know, in the way of a woman whose past regrets have come back to haunt her.
And she keeps calling her Lucy. And Brittany says,
yeah.
Why do you keep saying my name like that?
She's like, because I read a Dale Carnegie book.
And then she, Brittany finds out that, or Lucy finds out that she's remarried and had two sons.
Who look like twerps.
Yeah, they look horrible. And then the scene cuts out, so we don't actually get to see what the conversation is. But we do see Kim go like, Brittany, we have to have a talk. And this is the greatest Sarah Marshall impression of all time.
This is actually an impression of my friend from Bennington, Savannah Dooley. But as impressions of impressions goes, it is, of course, I'm sorry I left the family, Brittany, but I was too busy fucking.
There it is.
I love it so much.
I love it too. It's brought me joy these last 18 years.
I think about it all the time.
And we can imagine that that's the cut scene.
That's probably what it was. Yeah.
Before Brittany shows up at the hotel where her friends are soaking wet. I guess it's raining in Arizona.
She walked. she walked for probably miles in the rain.
She's wet.
Which is funny. I'm like, honey, take a cab. Like, take a single cab.
She doesn't have any money. They spent all their karaoke riches.
Right.
So they're in the hotel in beautiful Tucson.
In beautiful Tucson. Brittany, like, goes to the bathroom and has a breakdown to Anson Mount. You know, she starts crying and says that her mom never wanted to have her. Her dad forced the mother to have her. And that she was just a mistake.
And that she knows all this because Kim Cattrall told her this, probably in those exact words, which is truly like, there's nothing worse I can think of in this moment.
Yeah. It got me. It really affected me.
Yeah.
I didn't expect, you know, I've seen this movie so many times. And I think knowing, again, it's like the layer of knowing what Brittany has endured with her own family and parents. Mm-hmm. I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Nobody should ever be told that, you know?
Yeah.
So like the next day, Lucy has collected herself and Anson comes into the room and says, hey, can I see the poem that you read me? And she's like, okay, sure. And she gives it to him and he rips it out of her diary or her journal book or
her log,
her poem novel, comedy concert. And then he brings her to this entirely windowed room with a piano.
Yeah, it's, you know, the piano conference room. It's the same room in the hotel where Richard Gere has piano sex with Julia Roberts.
That's what it is,
of course.
And I think that that's the hotel lounge in that movie.
that checks out.
Yeah, it must be some sort of lounge thing, Arizona.
So yes, so as he's playing, this was the moment that I realized that this movie is very a musical, because she starts out, you know, like humming along the melody, and she's like, is this right? Is this right? And then suddenly she knows the melodic changes and when they're coming.
Yeah.
And that was the moment I was like, oh, well, these are musical rules. Of course she, of course she does. And I think the very musical concept of this movie is why every time someone says Mimi, my brain went, I'm surprised. A bright and charming girl like you
hangs out with these slackers who don't adhere to deals.
I think the very a musical thing, I'm loving it because very a play has become part of my vernacular. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm thinking of Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar. And I'm like, that's very a musical, not very a play, but very a musical. And there's a lot of like, I mean, there is a Legally Blonde musical, but if you watched Legally Blonde, it's very a musical.
Totally.
I love that.
Bring It On is very a musical.
Very a musical. And thank God for Caroline O'Donoghue.
Truly.
I say that every day. Thank God for Caroline O'Donoghue. I just wanted to quickly define what we mean by very a musical, because I think this is an important moment.
Yeah.
Because I think of like, say, for example, something like Dirty Dancing or Flashdance. Would you agree that those are very a musical? Right.
Yes.
And then we have the presence of both like sequences where like that are like set to a song. Right. Like you don't have Baby and Johnny dancing on a tree without Hey Baby.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And like Flashdance, too, which I think was criticized at the time for. Like, I think Roger Ebert and people like that were like, this is more of a series of music videos than a movie, to which the American public was like, so? So there's integration of music with the plot. And we know that there exist also like diegetic musicals, which is, you know, something like Cabaret.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think we're also like with something like Legally Blonde talking also about something where it's about like character subjectivity and like big moments to express character growth and emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And some kind of emphasis on like performance and like the big audition, the big trial, the big thing.
And like important needle drops that become sort of iconically.
Yeah. Like Watch Me Shine in Legally Blonde.
Yeah. Or Perfect Day. Mm-hmm. Or in Tu Wong Fu, they have a lot of like trying on clothing montages to a song that you know, when you hear the song, you think of that scene. And I feel like this movie definitely has like, I mean, the Sheryl Crow, If It Makes You Happy sequence.
I love that that's a big song in this movie. Mm-hmm. That song is like so the spirit of 2002 for me.
Yeah, which is after he plays her the I'm Not a Girl, Not Yet a Woman thing. And they sing it. They kiss.
Mm.
They've gotten close. It's confirmed he's not a killer. She's allowed to kiss him. And then they take off to LA and he's listening to his rock and roll music. And the girls, you know, had been giving him shit for that. So they finally, he switches it over to like a girly song. And it's If It Makes You Happy by Sheryl Crow.
Mm.
Character growth.
And then when he sings it, I get a little.
Oh my God.
I get a little into him. I don't know. I'm like. Oh my God.
I love that moment.
It's also a perfect transition song to LA.
Yes.
They're suddenly on a Malibu beach. Mimi has her feet in the Pacific Ocean, which was part of her dream. She wanted to put her feet in the Pacific Ocean.
Hmm.
Brittany is in a little bucket hat and she's talking to Anson Mount and she's like, you know, there are colleges out here. Maybe I don't have to go. You know, her dad, we'd seen that her dad was very wanted her to go to a certain college and do a certain major. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she had a teacher who was like, music classes make nice selectives. And Dan Aykroyd was like, well, we don't have time for that.
No, she's going to be a doctor. Like, okay.
Come on.
Yeah, imagine dancing, being able to perform like that and being forced to be a doctor. I wonder if the best performers in the world are like lawyers and doctors right now because they listen to their parents. Mm. Yeah.
Totally. How many people like demonstrated great talent as children and then had parents who were like, no.
Mm-hmm.
And were, you know, because a lot of people do get funneled into a certain profession by their families, which is something I've actually always found interesting about the Reagans, is that contrasting with the Bush family, by which I mean the generation of like the original Bush's children, George and Jeb and everybody. Like they all fell in line and did the succession thing. And both of Ron and Nancy Reagan's children were like, absolutely not. Don't feel like it. One of them dropped out of Yale to become a ballet dancer. The son, by the way. And one of them shacked up with an eagle.
We love it.
You know, it's very like the reverse of Britney in a way where we feel like maybe her parents were forcing her to be a performer.
Yeah.
And maybe she would have been happy to have become an accountant. And now here's Lucy, whose dad will not let her. But it's like cut from the same kind of cloth of like the pressure to be something.
She's weirdly able to play herself by playing someone who's not allowed to do the thing she's doing. It's a brilliant kind of jujitsu move.
Yeah. So they get to L.A.
They get to L.A. And she's like, I like this. This is my new dream.
And there's a big audition.
Mimi is still going to audition. Anson's going to put a band together because we know he plays guitar and he knows people in L.A.
He's going to put up flyers for the band.
And Kit goes to see her fiance. But she moves the cheese in a way because she takes Mimi sightseeing and she asks Ben to take them. But Ben and Lucy are like, I'm kind of tired. We might just stay here. And then Kit is like, but nobody could drive the cruiser except for Ben. And Ben takes the keys, tosses them to Kit and says, sayonara, babe. He is like, please leave. And then this is where Kit moves the cheese because she's driving around with Mimi and Mimi is like, the Hollywood sign is back that way. And Kit is like, we're going to see Dylan, who's her fiance. And Kit had talked to Dylan and been like, I'm in LA. And he was like, well, I'm busy tonight. So Mimi is like, please don't bring me with you. And Kit, you know, is very strong of mind. They show up. He comes out wearing a really great shirt, despite being such an asshole. I've always loved the shirt he's wearing. It's like a 60s bowling shirt. I don't want to belabor what we are getting around to, which is that in a span of 30 seconds, it is revealed that Dylan is cheating on Kit with a girl who has great shoes. Dylan knows Mimi's name. And Kit is surprised that Dylan would know who Mimi is.
Mimi, I'm surprised. Sorry.
They make fun, yet I am the one.
Actually, Dylan is major Benny vibe.
Yeah.
And then Dylan is drinking his beer out of a blue bottle. And Kit puts all the pieces together, realizes that Mimi got pregnant during Christmas break. The last time Dylan visited was Christmas. And she realizes that Dylan raped Mimi.
Ugh, God.
And later that night went to her house and had like a rip in his shirt. And she delivers a great performance.
Yeah. And what I love about this is that Kit is instantaneously on Mimi's side.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're modeling that too.
Yeah. And Dylan is being like, what are you talking about? Like, you know.
Babe.
Yeah. And she punches him in the face like Mimi taught her.
Like Mimi taught her.
Yeah. Mimi goes to run down the stairs and she trips. I just got chills thinking about it.
Yeah.
The keychain falling down the stairs is like so, oh my God, it still affects me.
Yeah.
She falls down the stairs and she, you know, loses the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And while this is all happening, Lucy and Ben finally have sex, actually.
Which we see before all these scenes happen. So it's not depressing, which is really nice.
Right. It's not intercut with the fight or anything.
Oh my God. Yeah.
But we do see them laying in bed and the phone rings. So then they're all at the hospital and Mimi reveals to Lucy that she decided to keep the baby when she had her feet in the Pacific Ocean, which is really... Yeah. Really sad. And then the scene where Kit goes to visit Mimi is like such a good scene because Kit is just like, you know, I mean, I don't know how you process that like the man that you thought you were going to marry has done something so traumatic to someone you love.
Mm-hmm.
And now this other trauma has happened with, you know, losing the baby. I mean, it's really gnarly for a teen movie.
Yeah. Cause like this is a movie about 18-year-old girls, you know, and so they're on the brink of adulthood. You know, they feel like
they're at a crossroads.
They're at a crossroads. They're girls, not yet women, and so forth. They're overprotected, even, if you will.
They love rock and roll.
Sometimes it's even a bit toxic.
Nice. And then Dan Aykroyd shows up at the hospital. I'm sorry, Sarah, did you have more to that thought?
No.
Just gotta fit all of them in. Right, so then Dan Aykroyd shows up. Lucy calls and she basically is like, the trip's over and, you know, I need my dad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is too big for me to handle. I gotta call in the reinforcements. And he does show up. And he's basically like, we're going to get you all home. Everything's fine. Who was that boy you were with? And then so they go to go home. And I also love that when they're getting in the car to go home, Brittany is like grappling with intense feelings. And then Dan Aykroyd is like, and we're going to get you home and everything will be fine. You know, it's very dad behavior. And she's like, Pop, don't make me do what she did. And he's like, everything will be fine. We're just going to get home and it's going to be okay. We'll all go back to normal. And she's like, that's not going to happen. And he just can't release the idea. Mm-hmm. And then she says the greatest line ever written. Don't make me be like her. Don't make me run. Just let me go.
And she goes.
This moment is indescribably great. And then she just walks 5 paces away and makes out with Anson Mount.
Then everyone gets out of the cab and watches them. And then we cut to the comedy concert, finally. And Britney Spears in the biggest sleeves you've ever seen in your life.
Yes.
And she is singing the finished production of the song that her and Ben wrote together. I'm not a girl, not yet a woman. Mm. And then it is revealed that they actually took the time capsule box also in the car on this road trip because they bury it again on a Malibu beach, but they don't wish for anything this time because they've already got each other.
Mm. Yeah.
And they're friends forever. And that's the movie.
I love it so much.
Cut to credits with bloopers.
With bloopers and overprotected plays.
I love blooper credits.
Crossroads. Incredible.
A 3.6. A 3.6.
15% on Rotten Tomatoes.
How dare you?
Is there no truth in media?
No.
No, there's not.
Do we have any thoughts that we haven't expressed? Are there any burning concepts before we get to the end of this beautiful, beautiful road trip?
I noticed this time that when they find the Polaroid of them in the box as kids, they're all singing into hairbrushes. So it's like, even though they don't say this, it's pretty clear that they like used to have sleepovers and make up dances and perform. And it's like the musical stuff is sort of part of the DNA of the friendship. And they don't ever say that, but it is clear to me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that when they're doing the karaoke contest, it's like an extension of, you know, their childhoods together.
Yeah.
I mean, my only thing I want to add is just, I mean, I'm coming to this movie without any nostalgia. I didn't like Britney Spears when I was growing up. I didn't see this movie. I really liked it watching it this week. It's something that I could easily watch 50 more times over the course of the next 10 years.
Will.
Just like while doing dishes or just like while hungover, while doing dishes.
If we ever have a sleepover, we're watching it.
Oh my God. And we have to.
We will.
You know, and it's, you know, I love that it's about the power of female friendship and also about including men if they know their place and have something really good to offer, like a car.
Yeah, and a song.
Yeah. And the part where Brittany like delivers the line, Eve, where she's like, don't make me run. I was just like, I don't know much, because what I learned from the 50 Shades of Grey books is probably more a hindrance than a help in this department. But I believe that's what we call topping from the bottom.
Yeah. I think also like there's this thing that I talk to my therapist about a lot about my current relationship, where it's like when you hold a bird in your hand, you're supposed to hold it lightly. And if you and you know, the bird is relationships. And if you hold onto it too tightly, you will crush it. And that applies to romantic relationships, but that's also kind of what Dan Aykroyd, he is so afraid for another woman to leave him, I think. Mm-hmm. His wife left him with this baby, and so he's like holding on to her so tightly.
Well, and forcing her to have the baby in the first place was holding on quite tightly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I don't think Dan Aykroyd is like a bad guy in this. Like, I'm sure that the Kim Cattrall character is giving her take on things, you know.
Neither of them come across as terribly warm.
That's true.
And that makes you feel for her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and she just wants to please him so badly. And, you know, he has this demeanor of love toward her, but also these absolutely unreachable expectations.
Yeah.
Of like, you're going to be a doctor and you're going to do this and you're not going to go out and party ever and you're not going to have friends. And like you're saying, Eve, that that is just holding on too tightly. And it appears that that is a chronic issue in Dan Aykroyd's life as a dad, which brings me to the question, which I think is sort of a foregone conclusion. We know that Dan Aykroyd holds on too tightly to women, including his daughter. So he is a dad. Who, in your view, Eve, is the daddy of Crossroads?
Who is the daddy? I'm going to give it to Kit.
Ooh.
Yeah. I really like Kit's arc. We've talked about musical theater a little bit in this. It reminds me of Glinda in Wicked. Mm. The pretty popular girl with seemingly no problems, no public problems, maybe dealing with some, you know, we never learn if she had an eating disorder, Kit, but like it could be assumed. I guess the arc of the perfect girl learning to like live in the imperfection is always like a compelling arc to me. So it's like she gives up her dream to get married because obviously he's not a great guy. He's done such horrible things. And she learns to let go of these dreams that like perhaps were never going to serve her, but she just thought they were what she should have wanted. Mm-hmm. I love a popular girl coming back down to earth kind of storyline. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
That scene at, when she's with Taryn Manning in the hospital, they don't even like say anything, but you just see her like, I don't know. I just, there's something about the like Kit coming back around that I thought was really lovely.
Yeah.
And Zoe Saldana is such a great actress.
Amazing. Yeah. I am going to give daddy to Tamara Davis. Eve told me while we were on a little recording break that the reason this film is even back out for our viewing pleasure and you don't have to go digging in the park for your DVDs is that Tamara Davis bought back the rights from Paramount to re-release it.
Oh my God.
So she is truly the daddy of this film.
She got it to us.
The daddy twice over.
She really did that. Yep.
Yeah.
Sarah Marshall, who's your daddy?
It's Brittany Bick.
Yeah.
It's Brittany Dick. Because I just think like if you were her life at this time, I just can't imagine the pressure and the chaos and just everything she had going on. And then, you know, the difficulty of adding a project of this scale, but it feels like she went all in and made something for the girls, and it's such a gift, and I'm so happy we have it back.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what else I found out during break? They did this in 40 days.
God damn.
Oh my God.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? So she didn't really take that much time off.
No, she would never.
Eve, I can't put up a shelf in 40 days.
I know, right? But I also think we talked about this a bit, but it's like the taking a break at all from Britney Spears to like be surrounded by the same people every day for 40 days. There's a documentary on the DVD, which I have right here, that shows the last day of shooting, and it's her singing I'm Not a Girl, Not Yet a Woman at the record. Comedy concert semicolon music. And she can't get through a take because she keeps crying. And it's like she must have loved seeing the same faces every single day for 40 days. That hadn't happened to her for how long, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, Eve.
Well, thank you both so much for going on this road trip.
Yeah. Thank you, Eve. And thank you, Brittany.
And thank you, Brittany.
Oh, my God.
Shall we bury our time capsule on the beach and run into the ocean?
Let's do it.
Yeah. I feel like what we have is right now. And right now, we have each other.
It's true.
All right, everybody, that is it for this week's episode of You Are Good, a Feelings podcast about movies. Thanks so much, of course, to Eve Lindley for being on this episode and bringing this romp to us and to you. Thank you, Miranda Zickler, for producing and editing the episode. We appreciate you for doing what you do and for making the whole thing possible. Thank you to Fresh Lesh for providing the beats that make the episode sound so sweet. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us on Patreon and Apple Podcast subscriptions, where if you are not doing that already, you can get an extended cut of this episode and also another bonus episode sometime later this month. Thanks for finding us on social media, You Are Good or You Are Good Pod, depending on whichever platform we're on. Sometimes it's different. I don't know which one is which, but you can find us at You Are Good or You Are Good Pod. You'll recognize us. It's the little logo. You'll see the logo and you'll be like, those are the people that I'm trying to follow. And honestly, I think that's it. I've talked enough. I hope y'all have a wonderful, wonderful day, a wonderful week. And we look forward to checking in again this time next week. And don't forget that you, my friend, are good. Take care, y'all.